Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the We're Having a Good Time podcast. What an exciting day. It's a Wednesday. I'm excited to be here. This will be coming out on a Thursday, but it's a Wednesday for me. I'm pumped about it. I've been, spending time out at the cabin. Did a couple of shows at Zany's. I had my own show last night, the Grand Ole Comedy Show at Zany's. Was sold out on a Tuesday. Very good show. Hot comics on the show. And I did, about an hour and 10 minutes between my opening 10-minute set and the final. And it's basically a full new hour. I think I did one joke that is off my special that is coming out on Netflix on July 29th called Wet Heat. So my new hour, it's not perfect, but it feels very good. And yeah, I mean, I already have a new hour. I don't really have a closer that I like. I don't really know what I'm going to do there, but I'll figure it out. But yeah, the new special is called Wet Heat, and it's coming out on Netflix on July 29th. I had kind of a tease that I had an announcement, and I don't really like doing that, but once I found out, I got very excited, but I wasn't able to talk about it yet. I wasn't able to, tell people, what I had going on, where it was coming. So I'm excited. That's coming out very fast. I chose the name Wet Heat. I have a joke about it. It's not dirty, but it sounds dirty, and I think it's fun. I think saying Wet Heat is very fun. Some idiot that posts comments on the Nateland Facebook group on YouTube said that it was referring, he heard it was referring to a fart. Let's see what he said, which it's not. He goes, how in the world did Dusty's title make it through the Netflix approval process? Yeah, I know. Wet Heat, of all the things out there in the world today and on Netflix and on all streamers, Wet Heat, how in the world? How in the world? He goes on to say, I heard it and, I don't think he means the and in there. I heard it correlated. I heard it and correlated it to a wet fart and started wondering as advertisement for his special if he's going to go around asking everyone to pull his finger. I can't read that mess, a jumbled up sentence, but what an idiot. And I'm sorry that guy feels like he needs to go around making those kind of comments. But it's going to be a great special. The title is not dirty at all. I don't want to give the joke away, but I probably already have because I've been telling that joke for a while. I don't know. But I talk about, I'll just get, I'll basically give it away. But in the South, we have humidity. We have out West, they say, oh, it's a dry heat. So here I say it's a wet heat. That's it. But the joke's very funny, and I thought it made a great title. I'm very excited about it. I love to read comments from the YouTube of the Nateland Facebook group because I like to see what people get bent out of shape about. My comments are very nice. I feel like almost every comment on my personal videos are very nice. Everybody just has nice things to say, and that's very, and I appreciate that. But sometimes people get really bent out of shape. Somebody said something, if Dusty doesn't want people to think it's dirty, I don't care if you think it's dirty. That's the whole point, is it's not dirty, but yet it seems kind of dirty. And my hope is that it seems intriguing to people, that people will go, oh, Wet Heat, what's that all about? And, I want people to watch it. I'm excited about it. I think it's better than Working Man. I like Working Man. I was very happy with Working Man, but I overall, I think wet heat is better. I like those jokes. I think it's very fun. And I like my new hour too. So it's all very exciting. I got two audio albums that I want to release. One is the Working Man audio, and the other is an album called Crockpot Comedy that I put together. And those are now streaming on SiriusXM, but I want to put those albums out, but I don't want to jumble things up. But I'd like to go ahead and put those out before the special comes out. And I'll probably be doing a lot of press. I got, I don't know, I forget what you call it, but publicist, I think. I've hired a publicist because I need maximum press. I wasn't going to do it. I was actually just going to start reaching out to comics that I knew that had podcasts and go, can I do your podcast? But, you know, it's more professional, you know, to hire someone to do that for you. And there's a bigger likelihood that they'll get it done. I mean, a lot of these comics, you know, that have these big time podcasts, a lot of them I know, not all of them, but a lot of them I know already. And so I think if I just asked them, they would say yes. But if a publicist does it, they're able to put together a nice schedule, get things lined up in a way, and it takes a lot of pressure off me. But it's very expensive. But, you know, the idea of all things is, you know, something costs money because it has value, right? So they're able to do something for me that maybe I can't do and probably can't. And then because of the exposure of those podcasts, people will go watch my special and then they'll come see my live shows. And then when people come and buy tickets to live shows, I make all my money back that I spent on them. And I also think that people just hire a publicist for when things are coming out. Some people probably have them all year round, but other people probably just have them for when things are coming out and then they fire them. So not fire them, but, you know, go, I'm not going to work with you until I need you again. I imagine that's what people do. So they're like, well, you're only going to hire us for a few months. So we need to get paid. We got to make money too. And I like that. That's what I'm all about. I'm all about this. I'm all about everybody making money without people being price gouged. And I mean, when I say people, I mean podcast listeners, people who buy tickets to comedy shows. You know, when you're getting into theaters, it's like tickets have to cost a certain amount, right? It's like you can't, they have to be a substantial price because, you know, it's like I have management, I have agents, I have, a publicist, a social media team. I have all of these people. They all have to make a living, right? I need to make money. The theater needs to make money. But I think that that can all be done without getting out of control with tickets. That's what I think. And that's what I try to do. And I have been told, someone recently reached out to me and said, man, your tickets really went up. And this is what I was told, that the federal government passed some kind of law that said ticket companies like Ticketmaster, they have to show all the fees up front. So let's say I had a $35 ticket, and then you go in and you buy that ticket. By the time those companies are finished adding on fees, it's a $50 ticket. But now, when you go on, it just looks like it's a $50 ticket. So it looks like I'm charging the $50, whereas really what's happening is there are fees added on to that already in the beginning. So you don't have hidden fees. I think it's good that that's a thing, but I think initially as it's happening, it looks like I'm charging that much money. And I do have some $50 tickets. I have some more expensive tickets than that, but I always want to make sure there are, you know, decently priced tickets. I mean, I'm not Elvis out here, you know? I want people to come to my show, and I don't want people to, you know, break the bank to come see it. I want people to come see an hour of comedy, be able to laugh and, you know, and not feel like they wasted their whole paycheck to do it. But You know, I got 2 hours starting in July 29th. I will have 2 hours on Netflix. I'll have Working Man and the new one, Wet Heat. And I'll also have an hour that's still on YouTube. So there's plenty of free Dusty Slay comedy out there. And then you can come see a live show. And live is always better. Everybody knows live is better. So that's exciting. So I still got some time off in June. I'm enjoying it. Even though I did shows, they were local shows. I'm just trying not to travel. Even though I've traveled a lot with things. I traveled to Atlanta to do the be in that movie, and then I travel back to Atlanta to be part of the podcast. But I feel like I'm done traveling for the rest of June, and that feels good. I don't even know what day it is. Yeah, it's the 25th, so that's not a lot of time. But I don't have a lot of travel until the end of July. End of July, I'm going to Winnipeg, Canada. I think I'm going there on the 20th. I have a show. And then I'm doing a show with Theo Vaughn and Laura Peak in Winnipeg, Canada, the Great Outdoors Festival. So that'll be fun. And then July 25th, I'm in Vegas, Las Vegas. And then I have my show on the 22nd of July. And I think that's it for July. And then August, it's ramping up. August, we're back in action. But I'm very excited. I mean, the Vegas show will be my last show before the special comes out. So, I hope it ramps up. I'm pumped about it. The first special took me from clubs to theaters, so maybe... You know, the next one takes me to slightly bigger theaters, because this is the thing that I've been told, that I'm at now is a good 800 to 1,000 seat theaters. That's where I sell the best. That's where I'm at. But there's more 2,000 seat theaters out there, so I can go to more places when I have those size theaters. So that's the goal, is to get to that place. And I feel good about the trajectory. Even though sometimes it feels like the country's falling apart, other times it feels like the country's doing great. So I don't know. When I'm in California, I go, geez, the gas is expensive these days. And then I come back to Tennessee and I go, oh, it's half the price. I think California is so great that if it like the gas prices are twice the price of gas here, and I imagine that makes everything else a little bit more expensive. But if not for the cost of living in California, I would consider living in California. I think I really like it. I don't mean LA, but I mean, you know, the countryside and the smaller cities in California are really great. It's a really nice place, and you have this really great weather all year round, depending on where you're at, and you can just grow things all year round, and I think it's right up my alley as a place. But it feels like, speaking of price gouging, it feels like that's what's happening out in California, which is too bad. I wanted to own a little bit of property in Arizona or New Mexico because I want to grow succulents. But I also wanted to, I don't think I have this kind of time. This is what I'll do when I retire from comedy. I want, if there's any land left, I want to buy some desert land and get into these water projects. I always talk about this guy, Andrew Millison. If you ever get bored and you just want to watch some stuff like that, Andrew Millison has a YouTube account, and he's a professor at Oregon State, and he's all about restoring land by building water sources. That's where I got, it's not exactly where I got the swale talk from, but he furthered it for me. Like right now, I have an idea for my cabin. And if you've ever watched any of these land videos, this is what I want to do out there. Down below, I was just talking to my neighbor who said, don't buy no river rock. Don't you buy no river rocks. That neighbor, he came down and me and him were talking. And I was talking about being down by the creek. And he said that creek is 100% mountain stream fed, meaning these streams come out of the mountain and feed that creek. He said, if you go down this way about 100 yards, he said, the creek is dry. So it's just like just about where my land is at is this beautifully clear water. It's so cold. The water is so cold. Even on these hot, hot days, it's so cold because it's just coming. It's just flowing right out of the mountain. So what I would like to do is I would like, because I have a hill where at the very top, I have a hill and then it kind of flows down. Then I have a flat area where I have the cabin and then I have go down a little bit and I have the swales and then I have more of my trees planted on this one hill going down and then it all goes back down to the creek. And the way the land is shaped out there, my neighbor said, all of the rain, when it rains really heavy, it all filters it right down to the creek. So that's where that area that's dry, he said it can easily raise several feet just by rain coming in and it all flowing right down to the creek. So what I'd like to do is on the very top, I want to build a small pond, not a big pond, a small pond. And I want to fill it with river rocks. And that I don't plan on buying. I'd like to find them. And the creek has all these, it looks like freshwater snails, freshwater mussels, and they're all attached to the rocks. And I think they're just filtering that water. So I'd like to get some of those, bring those up to the pond. And then I want to get a solar pump. And that pump will pump water up to the pond. And then have an overflow of the pond that goes down through the land, build channels and pipes. I already got a little bit of that going right now, but channels and pipes to where it goes down, filters down into the swale, and then the swale fills up, and then that overflows into the other swale, and then that overflows, and have it run through the land a bit to water various trees, and then down back out into the creek. So I'm not even stealing water from the creek. I'm borrowing water. I'm rerouting water. And it would be able to water more things. So I'm not just watering things with, this faucet, which probably has a lot of, toxins in the water. That's the idea. That's what I want to do. And I have a land management company that has reached out to me. So I'd like to try to pitch that idea to them. I'd like to get some people involved. Maybe try to get people from, Tennessee universities involved. So, maybe get some people tell me that there's grant money available for these types of projects. And I'd like to see if I can pull it off. Because then, I'm bringing up more wildlife because of the swale, I've noticed that I have more birds up near the cabin because now they can just drop down to the swale and get water. They don't have to go all the way down to the creek. So more birds are around. And that's what I want to do. And then I there was a deer. I was cutting grass with the zero turn and a deer was just right out there. And I stopped and watched. I had a little video of the deer. That was fun. I killed a snake. I didn't mean to. I wish I didn't. It was a rat snake, but I ran over it with a lawnmower. It made me very sad. I had a real moment. I wasn't crying. But I think it's a good snake. Helps keep, rodents down. But my neighbor, I told him that I did it, and he made it sound like there are too many rat snakes, and that's why you don't see any rabbits anymore. So I didn't feel as sad about it when he told me that. But it is, I don't like killing stuff. I'm not into it. I've never liked it. And if it were a rattlesnake, I would have been all about it. I would have been like, I'm glad that happened. And I hope I never see another, but it was a rat snake. And then I saw a turtle. We saw a turtle. I feel like it was the same turtle that we saw last time. Because it's still small, but it seems a little bit bigger. So I feel like we saw the same turtle. I think it's just hanging out down in that area of the land. So I didn't cut the full bottom down there. I did cut some trails down there, and that's where I ran over the snag. But I want to be able to move about down there. You know, I want to be able to drive the four-wheeler without being in grasslands up to my eyes. But I felt like I don't know if I want to cut the whole thing. I like letting some wildlife run about down there. But I got this water idea. I'm into it. I got a lot of ideas. But I don't have time because I have a booming comedy career that I also have to manicure and I have to water and I have to grow. But it feels good. I didn't do comedy for about 3 weeks. And then when I did this like Nateland Live Showcase, season 3, they just filmed, I hosted one of those episodes and, I was nervous. I didn't do comedy for about 3 weeks and I got nervous again and I don't get nervous anymore. So I needed that because I wasn't really nervous last night because I had already gotten back out there. But, comedy's fun, but yeah, I mean, if you don't do it, I made this joke last night, but at Zany's, the way it's set up, the way the club is set up is the green room is, well, let's see how I can explain it. If you're sitting in there and you're looking at the stage, there's a little staircase that comes up to the stage, and then there's a room with a door, and that's where the green room is. So we're like sitting back in the green room, 4 or 5 people, and then they go, "Ladies and gentlemen, Dusty Slay," and then I open the door, and there's 300 people cheering. So you go from just hanging out with your buddies back there to like, oh, here's a full-on audience of people that are ready to be made laugh. Be made laugh, is that right? And it's wild. It is wild. And it's exciting. It is so exciting. This past weekend, I went down to, we were all at the cabin, me and my wife and kids, and we decided to go to the Chattanooga Aquarium. My son had his second birthday, so my kids are now officially 2 and 4, and we wanted to take him to the Tennessee Aquarium down in Chattanooga, where I have not been in a long time. I went as a kid. Love Chattanooga. It's where I filmed my special. Wet Heat was filmed in Chattanooga. So I went down to the aquarium, and My mom came, and my nephew and niece, they're like my niece's kids. I like to say my step-niece. She is my step-niece, but I don't feel like that's really necessary to say. But I like saying that stuff because I feel like it's funny. I want people to know how the family tree is branched, how it's all like laid out. Because it's like, this is my niece is my brother-in-law's daughter from his first marriage. But she's, you know, maybe 8 years younger than me. So I was probably 8 when she came into the picture. Because my nephew is 10 years younger than me. And he's only a little bit older than her. But what's even funny, I mean, it's like my sister is, we never consider ourselves this. We don't say this, but she is my half sister, right? We have the same mom, different dad. So it's like my family tree gets so branched out that at some point you're like, how related am I to this person, right? They are family. So I don't mean it like that they're not family. But when you actually talk about blood relation, you're like, what relatives do I even have? You know, because it's like I have multiple marriages from my dad, multiple from my mom. And then, you know, it's just, it's funny to me. So it's my step niece's kids and my mom's step great grandkids. But they're great. They're really fun. I like them a lot. The one guy is, he has a YouTube account that I'm always trying to help pump his YouTube for him. He's too young to have a YouTube, but he's allowed to have one, so I try to help pump it for him. But he's never motivated to be posted on there. I think if I was around him more, I could get him more motivated to do things. But I always do a video for him, and then he says his accounts always get deleted. So I don't know what happens. But he's a little older. I would say he's 6 or 7. And then the girl is, she's 4. She's Daisy's age. And Daisy loves them. And Sam loves them. And they love Sam and Daisy. So it's really sweet. So we all met up, went down to the aquarium. It was great. The aquarium's long, and it's in two parts. You have the fresh water, and then you have the salt water. And the fresh water is what I love. I feel like every aquarium is focused around, you know, the ocean. I love seeing that river stuff. I love seeing the freshwater stuff. To me, that's what's so fun. And apparently, Tennessee has some of the most diverse freshwater fish in the whole country. I don't know how accurate that is, but Hannah told me something like that. That it's one of the, if not the most diverse freshwater river fish in the country. And I think that's pretty amazing. So we did both. It was good. The kids did good for a while. I don't know if you've ever made this mistake, but we walked by Ben and Jerry's, and I told Daisy, I said, hey, that's an ice cream spot right there. If you're good in here, we'll go get some ice cream afterwards. And then all she could think about was the ice cream the whole time. She kept being like, hey, when are we going to get ice cream? I go, you got to stop asking. Asking me is not being good. And then it went on for so long. We never got the ice cream. I never gave her the ice cream because I was like, you weren't good. Listen, you weren't bad. You weren't bad enough to be punished, but you weren't good enough to get ice cream. So I got her some fruit instead. And which is the better option anyway. And I think she was just as happy. But I want to tell this story. We had a really interesting thing that happened. I should have recorded this right away so it was fresh in my mind. But we all went. My sister was up recently, and she was trying to sell me and my wife on like Life 360, something like that, where you're all hooked up on your phones, and then like Hannah can track where I'm at, I can track where Hannah's at, and then we can all be connected to each other. And me and Hannah are both against it. I don't go anywhere, so I'm not really worried about that. I'm not worried that I'm not going anywhere that I don't need to be going. What I don't like about it is that I feel like it's almost more anxiety inducing for people because they're like, oh, where's he at? And then you pull it up and you go, and it's just like, it's too much. And I don't like it. So, all right, I say that. And so we're down. This is a different sister. This is not going to be the sister involved in the rest of the story. So we all go out to eat. Well, let's just start here. We pull up in the garage on the day of the aquarium. And I have a Toyota Tacoma. It's gray. I don't really know all the terminology of what I have. TRD, something like that. I know my neighbor, when I got it, he said, oh, you got the turd edition. And I was ready to get mad at this dude. And then I looked and I go, oh, TRD, ha ha ha. But I was like, what did you just say about my new car, dude? But I didn't do it. I can get a little mouthy. This is the neighbor I yelled at once before about the fence. But so we pull up down in the garage, and my mom is like, there's a spot next to me over here. But there was a better, bigger spot before her, so we just pulled in there. And then she made the joke about another Toyota Tacoma TRD next to her, gray. She said, oh, I wanted to be in between the Toyota Tacomas, you know. Just making a joke, just a real mom joke out there. So we go do the whole day. And then afterwards we go to this Mexican restaurant and get some food. It was a Mexican restaurant. We had tacos and whatnot. Everybody that worked there was Indian. I never seen anything like it. I've seen Mexican people working at an Indian restaurant, but I'd never seen the reverse. But they have one of those in Chattanooga. It was delicious. We had a great meal. We loved it. And then we all go back to the car. We say goodbye to each other. We stop off at the bathroom in the parking garage. And then we go up to the car and we all say bye to each other. And me and Hannah, we go over to a Whole Foods downtown Chattanooga. And I'm picking up some stuff. And my mom calls me from my nephew's phone. And they're like, I said, I can't understand you. Call me on your grandma's phone. And they're like, she lost her phone. That's why we're calling on this FaceTime app, because she lost her phone. And I go, okay. So I start trying to help her. I call the restaurant. The restaurant's like, we don't have the phone. My mom goes downstairs to the bathroom of the parking garage. She says, I think I remember putting it down in there, but then she can't find it. And I'm trying to do everything I can do to help her find it. And I'm stressed out because I'm ready to go home. But now my mom's lost her phone. Now, she stays with my sister who lives in Cleveland, Tennessee, which is only 30 minutes away. But it's still, she's lost her phone now. All her pictures that she has, everything's gone. And we're all, so I'm like, all right, I want to help you find it. So she calls my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law has her on LT360 or Life 360, whatever it is. And he says, I'm showing that the, he goes, are you driving right now? Because I'm showing that the phone is going down the road right now. And I go, no, I'm not driving. I was, but now I'm stopped at a grocery store. And then he keeps watching. He goes, I'm showing that it's at an apartment complex and he's got an address for it. And I go, all right, well, I'll go there and I'll check it out. Now, I don't know why I'm going there. I'm not going to go knock on someone's door and go, hey, do you have my mom's phone? I don't even know what I'm doing. But for whatever reason, I go, all right, well, I'll go there. So I drive my wife and my kids to this apartment complex to look for this stolen phone. Because at this point, I'm like, what I'm thinking is my mom laid it in the bathroom. And then she left, and then somebody came into that public restroom, found the phone, and stole it. They just said, I'm going to take this home with me. So I go to this apartment complex. I'm just sitting in the parking lot. It's gated. I can't even get to the apartment. So I'm just sitting there. My mom's like, oh, I'm going to come. So she comes with the two kids. So we're all hanging out in this parking lot, and this girl comes walking by, who apparently works at the apartment complex. And she goes, what are you guys up to? You know, she's being friendly. She's passing by. She's not even really questioning us. And we go, well, you know, we lost my mom's phone earlier and we tracked it on Life 360 back to this apartment complex. And it's supposedly sitting over at that apartment building right there. And her eyes got real big and she goes, ooh, hold on. And then she runs back inside and then two other people come out that work there. And the lady that runs the place comes out. The lady that runs the place says to me right away, she goes, anybody ever tell you you look like Dusty Slay? She actually said Dusty Shea, but said, anybody tell you you look like Dusty Slay? And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And then me and her take a picture. We're in the middle of potentially a crime investigation, and we stop for a little photo op, but that was fun for me. And then they go, well, we've been trying to track somebody down that lives at this apartment complex, and or they don't live here, but they've been hanging out here, and we think they're up to something, and we think it might be in that building. So we're like, oh, whoa. So we call the police. The police come. We're talking to this guy. We're giving the guy the whole rundown, and we're telling him what's happening. And so a guy and that girl, they say, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go over to that building, and we want you to call the number, because I had been calling and the phone was ringing, but no one was picking up. So I was like, they were like, all right, so we're going to go and you call. And if the ringer's on, we should be able to hear it inside the apartment complex and we'll know what unit it's in. So we go, okay. But the my brother-in-law tracked it on Life 360. That this seems like an ad for Life 360. And I don't even know what it's called. But he had it tracked to where it was in a car in the parking lot. But we just thought, well, maybe it's just a little off on its accuracy, you know, because the cop told us, he said, with these things, he said, you're dealing with an apartment complex that has multiple floors and multiple units, so we might not be able to pinpoint exactly where it's at. Now, this was a moment the cop asked, before we went over there, the cop asked my mom, he goes, now, if we find this phone, do you just want your phone back or do you want to press charges? And my mom looked at me and I go, just get your phone back. I go, if you can get the phone, that would be great. First off, it's real annoying that somebody would steal the phone. Real annoying. But I think if we can get the phone back, that's a win. And I think if this person's a criminal, especially some kind of small time cell phone thief, and then people tracked it down to their apartment, maybe that's enough of a wake up call to be like, all right, maybe I don't need to be, maybe crime's not the life for me. And also I was like, you don't want to be showing up to court later. You don't want this hassle. All we want is the phone back. And they were like, okay, cool. So that's when the two people, they go over to the apartment complex and they go, you call. And so I'm calling. And then I'd called a million times. I'd called this phone a million times. I even sent a text that I just said, all we want is the phone back. And then I call and a guy answers. He goes, hello? And I go, hey. He goes, I just found the phone. He goes, it was sitting on the back of this Toyota Tacoma gray TRD edition. And it, me and my mom looked at each other at the exact same time. And we go, oh, no. And that's when we realized that my mom most likely set that phone down on the back of that truck in that parking garage, and then she couldn't find it. So she goes down to the bathroom to look to see if it's in there, and the guy comes up, gets in his truck, and drives home. We're like on a, we think we're on like a crime hunt, and this guy that has the phone doesn't even know that he took the phone. He has no idea. And we got the phone back. Everybody had a good laugh. And we went home. So it was like, my mom was so embarrassed by it, but I was like, this is great. This was so fun. The cop got to come out on a call, so he got to do his job and not have to do anything. The people at the apartment complex got to have an exciting little afternoon. The lady told my mom, she's like, I'm glad this happened because I got to meet your son. We all got to participate in a little bit of an excitement, and nobody got hurt, and we all got our property back. I think it's great. I love the story. I thought it was so exciting that on the way home, I called my sister to tell her about this new endorsement of Life 360 that we just got. And she thought it was really funny, too. It was a great story for us. The family loved it. It was a great time. Really great time. All right, I got a couple other things that I want to talk about. Let's see. I saved a couple of videos. Let's see what I saved. Maybe I only did one. And I don't even know now if it's worth it, but, well, this is what I did. I got some Morgan Wallen stuff, Morgan Wallen. And I know I always talk about this guy. I really don't have anything against Morgan Wallen. I don't have anything against him. And I think that I'm definitely in the minority here when I talk about him, because people absolutely love him. I was told that almost every one of his songs off his new, and I may have said this the last episode, that almost every one of his songs off his last album, his latest album, are like in the top 100 on Billboard charts. And I'm listening to these songs and I'm like, these are not good songs. At the very least, I don't want to say they're not good, because what does it mean to be good? What does it mean for music to be good? What does it mean for art to be good? What does it mean for a movie to be good? I like the movie Con Air, People make fun of me because I like the movie Con Air. They say it's one of the worst movies. I'm like, so what does it mean to be good? If everybody likes Morgan Wallen, it must be good, right? I just don't think it's country music. I showed it to my brother-in-law, though. He was here visiting, and he goes, that's got a country sound. That sounds country. And I go, I guess. I mean, what do I even know? But I'll just say this. It's not good to me. It's not to my taste. It's not the kind of country music that I'm looking for. And I just think there's a little bit of phoniness to it, an inauthenticity. That's what I don't like. I am, when I'm on stage, I'm a little different on stage than, say, when I'm just living my life. I'm a little different on my podcast that I'm doing right now than I am on somebody else's podcast. Because I do think as entertainers, when other people are around, you go into this entertainer mode. My old boss, Stu Barber, he used to tell me that. He told me that that I have a harder time having one-on-one conversations with people than I do with groups. Because when I'm in front of a group, I get to go into entertainer mode. And I think it's accurate. I think, to some degree, when you're talking the person versus the entertainer, there you could say there's inauthenticity because they're not exactly the same. I think you could make that argument, right? I'm not saying that's not a possibility, but I'm saying I think there's total fakery going on at times, and this is one of the things. The album is called I'm the Problem, and I think this I'm the Problem is a play off of the trouble that he's been in. So people see I'm the Problem, and they think, oh, well, this is this guy owning up to some of his, things he's been up to. And personally, I don't care about those things, right? That's never been my problem with him. You shouldn't go around saying the N-word. You shouldn't throw a chair off a building. But these are not my problems. I don't care what people do in their personal lives. My problem is the music that this guy is kind of hailed as like the new king of country, and I don't think it's very country. And he's also playing this outlaw thing, and I just don't think that's accurate either. I mean, and listen, nobody can be like the outlaws of old, right? Motley Crue, Poison, all these guys were, tearing up hotel rooms. People can't do that now. You don't get away. I mean, people get mad at Dave Grohl and that other guy who's in a band recently for cheating on their wives. And it's like, yeah, those things are not good. But these people are rock stars, right? They're rock stars. And now we're kind of holding them to this wholesome family values thing. And I'm just like, that's not what people like. If people heard that, the lead singer for Motley Crue, I don't know anybody of these names. If they heard that Gene Simmons cheated on his wife, the front man for Kiss, I think most people back then would go, oh, I didn't even know he was married. I didn't realize he had a family. But they hold him to these high moral compasses now. Like, Dave Grohl's the same for me, the same thing where I'm like, oh, you're mad at him that he cheated on his wife? I'm mad at him that his music is bad. When I saw Dave Grohl was on SNL at the same time Nate, and because I watched that episode. I don't watch a lot of SNL, but I watched that episode. And I was like, geez, that was terrible. And then I go read the comments, and everybody in the comment section is like, oh, this is amazing. Dave Grohl's the last big rock star. And I was like, oh. And so maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe I'm just out of touch, and that's what it is. But there was this scene where Morgan Wallen is on stage. It's apparently the first show of his tour, and people were saying, yeah, Morgan Wallen lit the stage on fire. He literally burned it down on his first show on his I'm the Problem tour. And then I go watch the video, and he's got a gas can out there. First off, I'm like, where'd you get a gas can at? It wasn't a gas can just laying around. All the stages that I've ever performed at, I've never seen a gas can laying around. And all gas cans now are these super safety gas cans. It's hard to get the gas out of there. It takes two hands to get the gas out of there. So he had an old gas can. Where'd he get it? I don't know where he got it, but he's dumping gas all over the stage. And then he lights a match. And when he lights the match, he throws it down, and it looks like pyro comes up. That's not how gas burns. So I'm not saying he didn't physically light the stage on fire, but I'm saying it was all planned. I mean, it was all a thing. It was all a thing they had planned from the beginning. And the song I'm the Problem, he says in the song, if I'm the problem, maybe you're the reason. So it seems like, based on the album title, that he's finally taken some accountability for his actions. But then when you listen to the song, you're like, oh no, you're just in some kind of relationship spat. You're saying that you and your significant other are both alcoholics, and you get into these, and she says, you're the problem. And he's like, well, you're the reason. And it's like, oh, okay. So you're just in a fight. And, I just think it's all fake. I mean, I think it's, they obviously have a very good publicist, because this guy is making millions of dollars and they're able to pull this off. And I think it's brilliant. I think it's all brilliant. I'm just saying I don't like the music. That's all I'm saying. But what do I know? That's also what I'm saying. I have this conversation with myself all the time. I go, yeah, you don't like it, but what does it matter if you don't like it? You're not buying the albums anyway. You're not going to the concerts. You're not buying the t-shirts. And it's true. It is true. What does it matter? There are people out there making good country music, and I think it's really good. But nobody cares that I'm telling them that it's good. So I'm not saying nobody, but most people. So that was it. I mean, watch the video. Watch the video for yourself and tell me if you think that that's an authentic, I'm burning the stage down, man. It's like when Limp Bizkit started basically a riot at the Woodstock in 98 or 99. That seemed real. I'm not saying that was good. I'm not saying I'm glad that happened, but it was real. I mean, they tore it up. When Charlie Rich had to announce John Denver as best male vocalist of the year and he lit the card on fire, he ruined his career. And that was real. Like, I think all of these things, when you see people do these crazy things and then their career gets better because of it, it just feels phony. Now, you know what I mean? It's like, because sometimes these things end careers. And when they end careers, I go, well, that was real. That's a person that did something that they weren't supposed to do. But when, like, I go back and forth on the Will Smith, Chris Rock thing, the slap, because the slap thing seems totally phony to me. It seems like totally phony. But it seemed to ruin Will Smith. I've never seen a more colossal fall for really no reason than Will Smith. I was talking about this with some people the other day because I was saying that about Will Smith and they brought up Bill Cosby. And I go, okay, well, that's the most colossal fall of all time. Maybe a Kevin Spacey. But those guys did things, you know, like Kevin Spacey and Bill Cosby did bad things. Will Smith didn't really do anything bad. I mean, yeah, it's not good to slap Chris Rock, but he didn't do anything that's so, like, we're like, oh, you know, like what Kevin Spacey did. But I mean, Will Smith had a hit song when I was a kid called Parents Just Don't Understand. And then he had a TV show my whole childhood, which is still one of the best TV shows. I mean, I think it's one of the best of all time. I don't have a top five TV shows of all time. Maybe I'll come up with one. But I would say it's one of the best. The scene with Uncle Phil in the pool hall is still one of the best scenes. The thing about Will Smith's dad not wanting him is a powerful scene. It's such a good show. And then Will Smith goes on to be an established actor, respected. Independence Day. I Am Legend. Hancock, I thought was really good. And then he's in, what was that one where his son's in The Pursuit of Happiness? All really great movies. And then he had, Men in Black. And then people make fun of it now, but Getting Jiggy with It was a hot song at the time. Whether you're ever at home now and you're sitting around going, you know what I'd like to listen to? I'd like to listen to Getting Jiggy with It. How about we pop in the Men in Black soundtrack? Or I'd like to hear Miami by Will Smith. But you know what? When I was 16, I had that CD. I rode around listening to it. I liked it. Even Eminem couldn't stop Will Smith. When Eminem said, Will Smith don't have to cuss in his raps to sell records, well, I do. So, you know, F him and F you too. You know, it was a powerful lyric, and I remember liking Eminem, and I remember being like, oh, bang, he really hit him with it. But I still liked Will Smith after that. Eminem didn't affect it for me. But his new song, I like Girls, Girls, Girls. What is that? It feels like that's like the most tone deaf song. It's like that was, you know, that in the 80s and 90s. Yeah, I mean, that was a hot song probably. But that's not, it seems tone deaf now. He says, I like pretty girls or something, I think. I don't know. I just think the biggest fall of all time for nothing. Right? Maybe there's somebody. If there's somebody else that you think is a bigger fall than that, let me know. Comment. Let's get some comments going about it. But I guess I say that to be like, I go back and forth on whether that's real or not. Because what blows my mind about that whole thing is Will Smith gets up, slaps Chris Rock, the host of the, and I know this is old stuff, but he slaps Chris Rock, and then he goes back and sits back down. Nobody kicks him out. No, and I know he's a big star, but he's in a room filled with big stars. So you got to think there's some sort of like security or police to be like, hey, guy, you got to get out of here. You can't be slapping people. And then Chris Rock just continues to host. I just got to think if you get slapped, you go, you know what, guys, we're going to take a little break here. And, you know, you want to be a man about it and not, you know, you don't want to lay down on the ground and be like, I got slapped. But what are you just rolling with it? And then they give Will Smith an Oscar. And then I guess you don't see him in anything now. So I just don't understand. I don't get it. So when I see people doing these big things that it's like, ooh, that was really bold, or ooh, I can't believe that guy was speaking out, or ooh, that guy's saying something that people don't want him to say, if it doesn't affect their career in a negative way, then I don't think it was real. I think it was manufactured. And then if it does affect them in a negative way, I go, yeah, that probably was real. That's just how I think. I don't know anything, but that's just how I think. Okay. Oh, here's another thing that I was thinking about, though. I wrote this down while I was in the aquarium. When I was a kid, older than my daughter, But when I was a kid, I went to the aquarium in Chattanooga, and I remember seeing this tank. But they have this tank filled with jellyfish, and it's illuminated, and it's like really cool. And my daughter is there, and she's more interested in touching the electronic things that change the lights of the jellyfish. I'm like, we're sitting there seeing things that generations ago people never saw. Like, before aquariums, I mean, who was even seeing jellyfish? Maybe from the top of the water, but who got to basically, you're basically floating with the jellyfish. But there's too many electronics now, and my daughter is too drawn into the electronics. I saw another lady there, and she was telling her kid, she kind of swatted his hand away from the iPads in there, and she goes, that's not why we're in here. We're not in here to look at that stuff. Look at the real things. And I said that, I said to her, I go, that's the same thing I'm having to do with my kids. And then she goes, are you Dusty Slay? And I was like, yes. And I appreciate what you're doing with your kids, you know. And I liked that the lady swatting her kids away from iPads was a fan of my comedy, because that's what I'm into. That's who I'm trying to tap into, is the homesteader, the new parenting style people. Like the new parenting style of, we're not going to do iPads, and we're not going to, I saw a video talking about how, you know, we're like not the first generation ever, but for the sake of the video, the first generation in a while, that's not like letting your kids just cry it out. Like we were kind of given that advice, when your kid's crying or your baby's crying, when they come home, you just let them cry it out. You don't pick them up. We didn't feel like that was right. We were like, we don't like that. I'm gonna tend to my baby that's just come into the world and has no idea what's going on. Now, I won't say that there weren't some bedtimes where we're like, all right, we gotta let them, we have to let them cry so they go to sleep, you know, and then you give it a little time and then go check on them. But, you know, it may, you know, you give them 10, 15 minutes and then go, all right, they're still crying, let's go get them. But you don't just let them cry it out. And then, like, swaddling. Sam liked being swaddled, and Daisy didn't like the swaddle. And I remember being like, you know, if she doesn't like being swaddled, why are we trying to force this swaddle on her? And I'm like, she wants to be free. And all I could think about was being in a sleeping bag with it zipped all the way up, or getting caught in my shirt trying to put it on and feeling a little claustrophobic about it. And this guy was just talking about this and various other things that, as I was watching, I was like, yeah, we are doing that now. We're doing that against some of the advice that we might have gotten from older generations. And I just feel like that we have so much information out there. And all I'm saying is I'm trying to be in touch with these people of the world, the hippies of the world, that I would think they would be called hippies at some point, but are just trying to do things alternatively and not just giving in to everything that society pushes our way. Free thinking, not thinking right or left, thinking, well, what do I actually think? Does my way of thinking fit into a box? Do I have to think this? Like, if you think one thing that one box thinks, do you have to think everything that the box thinks? I'm trying to do out-of-box thinking. Can I have an opinion on something and be wrong and that be okay? And I think so. I fully accept that I can dislike Morgan Wallen's music and not hate him as a person and not hate people that listen to his music. I don't understand it, but not hate it. I don't know what is appealing about Post Malone to people. I don't know what's appealing about Post Malone, country or not country, to be honest. But it's not up to me. If people like that, well, that's okay. It's okay to like it. I think I saw him singing some song acoustically years ago before he had all the face tattoos. And I really like that. I forget what it was that he was singing, but it was going around a little bit. And I thought that stuff was good. And I'm not hating on him. From all accounts, he seems like a very nice guy. And he says he's putting out a more traditional country album next time. And chances are I'm still not going to like it. Because I don't think, this is what I don't like. I don't think that the country musicians of old set out to make country music. I think they just made music that came natural to them and it fit into a country category. Jason Isbell is someone who often gets put into a country category, and I don't think he necessarily wants to be considered country. I've always considered him country, but you know, maybe the drive-by truckers aren't country, and some of my favorite stuff comes from, you know, some drive-by truckers albums. Let me see what this song's called. It's Drive-By Truckers, Decoration Day is what it's called. Whew, unbelievable song, Decoration Day. And also on that album is Outfit. Both really good songs. And I guess you could consider them country, but they are a little more rock. I'm just saying that I don't think that Waylon Jennings sat down and goes, you know what? I'm going to make a country album today. He was country. That's who he was. Willie Nelson. I think Willie Nelson has made all kinds of music, but it's all country when Willie Nelson makes it. And I just think that's the thing. So I think when somebody says, you know what, I'm going to make a traditional country album now, I think it's phony. But again, what do I know? Maybe the guy loves country music and he just says, this is in my heart to make country music. Beyonce, I listened to a little bit of that album. The album's not country at all to me. I've never been into Beyonce. I don't think it's for me, but I've never been into it. What was the band that she was in, with the women? I don't know. I forget that band, but, Scrubs, I don't want no Scrubs. Great song. I like some of that stuff, but it was a different time. I was a younger guy. Who was that band? I don't know, with the three women. I liked it, though. I like some of that stuff. I never been into Beyonce, but again, I don't think it's for me. I'm not into Britney Spears. I'm not into Christina Aguilera. Do I like Hit Me Baby One More Time? Yeah, of course I do. Do I like I'm a Genie in the Bottle? Absolutely. They came out when I was 16, when I was driving around in my car, discovering pop rock for the first time. Hit Me Baby One More Time was a hot song. And I'm a Genie in a Bottle. This is peak music. 1998 was when music was peaking. That's not a true statement coming from me. But what I am saying is I was driving around in a red Ford Bronco 2 listening to Marcy Playground sing I Smell Sex and Candy. I was listening to Third Eye Blind say, I wish you would jump back from that ledge, my friend. I saw them live. I was listening to Eagle Cherry talk about doing crystal meth. No, not Eagle Eye Cherry. Who was that? I don't know. Eagle Eye Cherry sang Save Tonight. Also a great song. Gosh, these were good songs. I was riding around listening to Limp Bizkit singing Faith. Because I got to have that. I loved it. I love Limp Bizkit. Are they a good band? I don't know. But I loved it. I loved it. And the last thing. Here's something. I thought this was interesting. I tried to give my daughter a biblical lesson when she said this. We were walking through Walmart looking for Sam a birthday gift, which he played with for about 2 minutes. She said, I want to get some toys for myself. And I go, you have so many toys already. And she said, yeah. And she didn't say this in a crying way. She wasn't in a panic. She said it in a very calm way. She goes, yeah, but it's not enough. And I go, yeah, that's a great lesson. And I said, it will never be enough. There will never be enough things. There will never be enough things that you can get. When I used to do drugs and was addicted to things, no, I never was addicted, but I would feel the pulls of addiction. I found this verse, and this is a Bible verse, and is Ecclesiastes, which I love. If you've never read Ecclesiastes, it's truly one of my favorite books of the Bible. It is just, everybody talks about Proverbs, and Proverbs is great too, but Ecclesiastes is on a different level. It is really good. And I found this verse, and it says, okay, so, all right, I got to go back. Here it is. Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 7. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet his appetite is not filled. Now, a verse that I read long ago read a little different. And let's see what the ESV says. All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. That's a little more like it. And to me, when I read that years ago, it spoke to addiction, nicotine addiction, any kind of addiction, where it's like all of your efforts, everything that you put into your life is to get more of this, and yet you will never have enough of it. There will never be enough. It's like, you know, eating. It's like you eat today, you could eat all the greatest food. You could hit all the buffets all day today, and then tomorrow you would be hungry again. You could smoke all the cigarettes today, yet tomorrow you would search for more cigarettes. When you see, heroin addicts out on the street, they're out on the street raising money to get more heroin because they could go to rehab. There's a lot of clinics where people could just go, you know what, I want to get clean, and they go to rehab and they get out, but the addiction has gripped them. So now all their efforts, all their toiling is for their mouth, is for their addiction, yet it is never satisfied. I remember one time I didn't smoke cigarettes for at least a year, and I was hanging out with my uncle. I went to visit my uncle in Gatlinburg, and I was on a trip with my dad, but I went to visit my uncle while I was there. Different. It was my mom's brother. And we sat up on the mountain. We grilled out some hamburgers. We had a couple of beers. He took out some vodka. We drank a little vodka, and he was smoking cigarettes. And I was feeling a real crave for some nicotine, and I had been smoking Black and Milds on and off. And so I told my uncle, I go, I want to go get a Black and Mild. And He goes, you can't drive. He goes, these mountain roads, he goes, you've been drinking, you can't drive these mountain roads. He goes, here, just have a cigarette. And I smoked this cigarette, and it felt so good. I've never had a cigarette so good in my life. I immediately asked him for another one. And he said to me, he goes, it's nice to see people enjoy their cigarettes. He said, I smoke so many of them now that I don't even know that I really enjoy them. And I did enjoy it. But all of those things showed. It was all that time that I took off cigarettes, all that time. It didn't matter. The moment I had one, I was right back in. I was like, I'd like another. And then my uncle saying, you know, I spend my life smoking these things, and there is no satisfaction. That being said, I've not had a cigar in 2 weeks now. Almost 2 weeks. I guess today makes 2 weeks. I will say, last night I was going to break it. After my show, I was going to do our regular cigar hang. I wasn't feeling great. My digestion's still not great. It is getting better. But I wasn't feeling great. And there was a lot going on after the show. I took pictures with people and got involved in a lot of conversations, and it took me a long time to make it to the truck. And then once I got out there, it was 90 degrees outside at, you know, 9:30 at night. So 9:30, 10 o'clock, it was still 90 degrees. So I had about three puffs of the cigar, and then I just told the people I was with, I go, I hate to do this, guys, but I'm gonna leave. I am so hot. I can't wait to get in this truck and fire up this air conditioner. So I did have a few puffs, but really, I don't count it. I've had no cigars, 2 weeks, very little coffee. Some mornings I'll have one cup, but for the most part, no coffee. And no weed. So I'm living a real straight edge life right now. And so I get a little fired up. And it is so hot. I know I've been complaining about this and that, about the rain, but this is what it did to me this year. I felt like May was weirdly not warm. June was weirdly not warm and rained every day in June. I really think it rained every day in June. And then all of a sudden, one day, the first day of summer, it is just blazing hot out there. And I like it, but I wasn't ready for it. Okay, well, I appreciate you guys listening to this. I hope you've had fun. I hope you're, if you're big Morgan Wallen fans, I hope you're not upset about what I've said. And thank you very much. We're having a good time. Thank you.